What truly helps solve a cold case? Some people say that it takes a lot of press, but that doesn't always prove to be true. Take JonBenet Ramsey, for example. JonBenet was killed at the age of 6 in her family's home in Boulder, Colorado. Her death was ruled as a homicide, and the case generated nationwide public and media interest, including countless documentaries on Lifetime, Netflix, ABC, and more. But yet, the crime is still unsolved and remains an open investigation with the Boulder Police Department. Others say that in order to solve a cold case, you need money to hire detectives. This doesn't always prove true either. The music world was rocked in the late 1990s when rap superstars Tupac Shakur and the Notorious B.I.G. were gunned down about 6 months apart. Despite countless resources, including loads of money rumored to be somewhere in the millions dedicated to solving these crimes, both of these notorious murders continue to remain unsolved. The reality is, you can't buy justice. So what do we do when justice feels impossible? Even when someone has all the resources at their fingertips, this may still not be enough. Time and time again, the secret to solving a cold case is right in front of us. It involves people speaking up. It involves people in the community being active. And it involves a great deal of transparency. Since this podcast has been released, Love and Justice has started a movement. Over the past few weeks, our tip line has been flooded with questions. Self-proclaimed couch detectives, people from all walks of life, are coming together with one common goal in mind: to find justice for Ashley Love. Today, this episode is for them. To answer questions, to provide clarity, and to help as others attempt to bring about the answers that will bring Ashley's killers to justice once and for all. Welcome to a very special Q&A episode of Love and Justice. Greetings and welcome to Love and Justice. I'm your host, Kyle Olson. Today, we are taking questions from all of you, our loyal listeners. I am pleased to be joined today by Tammy Love, Ashley's mother. Throughout this episode, we are going to do our very best to give detailed answers to the questions you are hoping might begin to tie this entire case together. So let's dive right in and take a listen to our very first question.
Hello, my name is Andrew. I'm a big fan. I love what you guys are doing, and I've loved listening to all the episodes. I do have a question. Was anything stolen from the Love House on the evening that Ashley was murdered? Also, what evidence was processed from the crime scene that we know of? I can't wait to listen to the next episode. And again, thank you so much.
Now, I think I remember, we talked a little bit about this in the podcast episode, but if I'm not mistaken, when we talked, you had mentioned that nothing was stolen from the house that night. Is Correct. That accurate?
As far as I know, nothing was taken from our house. In essence, everything was taken because Ashley's life was taken. You know what I mean?
Right, of course. You would give up all of the things to have Ashley back.
Exactly. Right? As far as I know, the night Ashley was murdered, nothing was taken from our house.
And I think it's also important to note, next to Ashley's bed or very close to Ashley's bed, Ashley had like a safe, right? That was that she had cash or money that she was saving up for, whether it was a car, right?
Yeah. She was saving up to buy a car, and near her bed, she had a little black safe. Mm-hmm. And it was not touched. No, nothing was stolen out of it, as far as I know.
Right. Okay. So this kind of leads back to something that I remember Sean talked about in episode 2, which was that, you know, the fact that nothing was stolen from the house speaks quickly to the idea that this was not a robbery gone wrong. This was a very direct attempt to take somebody's life, somebody in particular's life. Right.
So exactly.
That's correct. It's a good question to ask to kind of clarify. But yes, especially when you talk about the fact that Ashley had this safe full of money next to her bed.
Yeah.
You know, she's saving up for things, nothing stolen from the house, the safe is untouched, you know, all that.
Yep.
Okay. Andrew has a second question here. What evidence was processed at the crime scene? now, I know that this is a tough question for us to answer. So most of this answer, I would like to defer to Steve Spingola, who we got to actually ask this question to.
This case here, it's a strange case. We take a look at victimization. That's a field of study. And what we do is we look at what makes an individual a high risk, a medium risk, or a low risk victim. And so what we basically try to do is take a look at the factors, what's going on in their life. So obviously, you know, when we have missing women, we start looking at relationships in their lives. We start looking at work relationships, financial relationships. And a lot of those leads were exhausted right away with Ashley Love. I mean, they went through her social media. She seems to be, and she is, from all indications, just a great person. So she should definitely not be a high-risk victim. And what went on in that house that night is, if it wasn't hell, it's got the same zip code. Imagine finding your daughter shot with a shotgun in the face. What happened has always been the big question. And I've talked to individuals who have worked the case, and they've talked to me about what I would do and what they did. And basically, in my opinion, every lead that they could have followed up on, they did. And so far, there's been no identification of a suspect. I actually have to believe that one or two other people know about this case. For some reason, this guy targeted Ashley. They've gone through, again, all of the, I guess, relevant factors in her life at that time. She's only 19 years old, an honor student. She's working. I mean, what in her life could she have ever done to deserve this? But again, we know that people, for whatever reason, they target individuals. And it's usually relationships and stuff that we look at. But again, they've gone through that with her, and there's been no leads at all as far as identifying a suspect in this case. The evidence in the case, you know, the physical evidence in the case involving the murder of Ashley Love involved spent shotgun shell casings, which, if you're familiar at all with ballistics, shotguns are not traceable. There's no lands and grooves like there would be in a pistol barrel that are going to lead you to what type of a gun was involved. Again, the shot shell casings that were spent at the scene were sent to the crime lab. There's not going to be any fingerprints on those because of the heat that's generated when a shell is fired. So that was kind of a general, you know, an unfortunate, I guess, fact that a shotgun was used, and that weapon will probably never be linked to the crime itself because they're not traceable. But nothing else, you know, in this case is able to be identified to a suspect. And again, eyewitness identification, I believe the shooting occurred somewhere around 2 a.m. and Tammy Love had a view of the suspect, and she's never been able to give a real accurate description. And again, eyewitness identification, we know what it is. We know people under stress, or, you know, can you imagine waking up at 2 a.m, you're groggy. So everything that they've basically been able to get from the family and talk to them, it's gone nowhere. And that's not their fault. People know what they know. People see what they see. How many times have we had a case? We don't know. Had they just walked in front of a camera, had they just done something a little bit different, it would have led to a solvability factor. But sometimes criminals get lucky. I don't think there's a perfect crime, but this one here, the evidence right now, it's not been able to be used to positively identify anybody. As far as the computers and cell phones, they're downloaded immediately, sent to the FBI, sent to our Wisconsin Regional Crime Lab, where they're analyzed. And they want to do that immediately because obviously, you know, a suspect could erase his or her Facebook or, you know, phone records and stuff like that. So they've had that. It's been downloaded. So again, that evidence wasn't able to be used to positively identify anybody. And she does not seem to have, you know, a very, I'm trying to word this carefully, a very, I guess, large dating life, a very big social life. She's a hardworking honor student. This is not typical of what we see in homicide victims, where people are out partying, involved in drug use, having boyfriends with criminal records. I mean, she doesn't fit any type of a template. And so that has basically stymied the police department.
I do know that you have a little bit of a story to add to this. Yep. Can you tell us about that?
Well, after CSI came in and cleaned Ashley's room looking for evidence and stuff, people were allowed back in upstairs. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody found a shotgun shell that the police didn't find.
I vaguely remember hearing this story a while back. And if I'm not mistaken, the story was that you had sent like a family friend over to the house to grab some things because you guys were staying elsewhere after this happened.
Yeah. And it might have been when they were cleaning. They offered to go clean up Ashley's room for me because I couldn't do it.
To go and like collect her things. And
yeah, to pack her stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because they're also the ones that found her, the little red iPad, that little red, you know, where the pictures are on.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So the day that your family friends go to the house to clean up Ashley's stuff, they find the red iPod that has Ashley's photos on it. And right. They also find these bullet shell casings. Okay. So they found both of these things in Ashley's room. We obviously know what happened to the red iPod with the photos on it. You gave that over to the authorities and they took it and you haven't seen it or the photos on it ever since.
Correct.
But my bigger question now is, what happened to that bullet shell? Did you do anything with that?
I never had it. I think they turned it over to the police, as far as I know. I never saw it.
Gotcha. So it's one of these tricky things, right? Where it's like, you know, everybody, we're all human, right? Mistakes happen.
Exactly.
But it's also hard because it's like, shouldn't they have found that?
I agree. From what I'm hearing is a lot of things that people don't understand why they were done or not done. As years go on and you hear, it's like people say stuff to me. I'm like, that happened? I'm like, really? They left that there? Like, you know, I'm just like, what the heck?
Yeah. It's hard to know what to make of it, right?
Yeah. And I've said it to the police. I even said it to the detectives. I'm like, you know what? We're all human. I don't care at this point about mistakes. I just want these people caught. Start over. Go find them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you kind of told the detectives, as far as I'm concerned, we can clean slate this. I don't really care.
Exactly.
But, you know, take the thing that we're giving you, right, and just do something with it.
I just want these people caught. You know, I just want them caught and put away.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a bit of hindsight in that if you knew what you knew now? Because I would imagine that when you were first dealing with this, obviously it's a flurry of emotions is an understatement, right?
Correct.
But you're dealing with this entire, just trying to comprehend the news. And then also you're doing what you know best. And oftentimes what we know best is what comes from us watching TV shows and movies, right?
Yeah,
and so, right. And so you're handing over everything you can to the police with the good intentions of the more I give you, the more open and transparent we are, the quicker you're going to solve this and the quicker we're going to find justice.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And in doing so, you maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you maybe forget to take a second to kind of absorb what you're handing over to the authorities yourself.
Exactly right. Yep. Back then, 13 years ago, I had no clue. I wasn't even on Facebook. I mean, that had just started. I mean, all that, I had no idea how to do any of the electronic stuff. Mm-hmm. I was really stupid that way. You know, now I, over the years, I've learned how to do that kind of stuff with the help of people. And yeah, I so wish that I would have sent those pictures forward somewhere so I had them and other things. Who knows what else was on there?
Yeah. And not just the iPod, but like a lot of the evidence that you guys handed over, just kind of wishing that you would have backed it up first. Because again, I imagine that at the time, your mindset was very much, we're going to hand this all over because we're going to see it back soon once they solve the case.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yep.
But now, hindsight, this case is cold. It's been 13 years. You haven't seen anything, including photos that we've had multiple detectives tell us is unusual and that you should have every right to have back. And yet we even struggle to get those.
Exactly. And then the back of my mind is, you know what my thoughts are? I'm like, what? Did they lose them? Did someone take them? Mm-hmm. Where's it at? I mean, I can't help but think that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm human. Wouldn't you think that if you were in my position? Like, where is the stuff? I've asked to see the stuff. I asked the detective, can I see this stuff? I don't want to touch it. I don't need to have it. I just want to know you have it.
Mm-hmm. And what did they say?
Oh, Tammy, nobody can get into the evidence room. That's you know, nobody can get a hold of that stuff. It's all there. And I'm like, then let me see it.
Mm-hmm. That's tough, huh? When we know, like, if we're kind of talking in black and white terms, right, we yeah. know that statistically they probably haven't touched most of this in a while, right? Because the case yeah. is cold. And
exactly.
you know, in reality, the only way they're going to touch us again is if they get new leads, new tips, new clues, people calling in, what have you.
Yeah.
That can actually reignite this case. So you know that for all intents and purposes, a lot of this is in fact collecting dust, but it's got to be hard to process that. And to your point, kind of try and differentiate, okay, is it there? I understand the sensitivities around the case, but at the same time, you know, you can't blame me for thinking the things I'm thinking.
Exactly.
When it's been 13 years and I haven't seen so much as a photograph back, which doesn't seem like a stretch to ask for.
And to me, that's part of Ashley. All that stuff is connected to her.
Mm.
So every time I think, oh my God, you know, what did they do with that? I mean, she'd be upset. Like, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, my gosh, she'd be upset. They what are they doing with her computer? What are they doing with her wallet? Like, that's part of me thinking as a mother for my daughter. I still have like all her stuff packed. Like I have most of it here and there. When I get the feeling that she's telling me that I should give this to somebody, I will give it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I sold my one car, the car that I taught her to drive in, she had just got her driver's license in August. And mm-hmm. I had taught her to drive in that car. It was like a piece of her going. You know, so everything is like a piece of her going, like, or being taken away. I still, to this day, have her Frosted Flakes box of cereal in my pantry. I will not get rid of it.
Really?
Yes, I have it in my pantry. And through all our moves, whoever we went, that box stays in there. There's certain things I can't. It has to be there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that just helps you kind of keep her close to
exactly.
you and
mm-hmm.
keep her part of the house, even though, because you've moved houses a number of times now
yes.
since this happened.
Yeah.
And so this is a way to keep her in these new houses where obviously she's not physically able to be,
exactly.
but
yep.
in other ways, she's able to be around
yeah.
in many different ways, right?
Correct. Yep. I mean, people, they think, oh my God, you know, they're crazy, but if they were ever to be in a situation, like I have known so many people that they have that certain thing that they can't, you know, get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a situation where you lose a child, it's not everybody, but a lot of people, whether you think, have that special little plate or that cup or that something.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's go on to our next question here.
Hi, Kyle. This is Mike from Texas. I just want to say I love the podcast and what you guys are doing. Kyle, when Ashley was murdered, were you living in Los Angeles at the time? Did you go back to Milwaukee? Just curious to hear your perspective during that time. I guess my second question is, when Ashley's case became a cold case, did Tammy ever get a call? I'm curious what it's like to hear that news.
I remember fairly vividly where I was when I heard this news. And I don't think I've actually talked about this story on the podcast. I remember I was in Los Angeles when I saw this on Facebook. Somebody that had gone to Pius was a friend of mine on Facebook, and they had posted that they were so sorry to hear that another fellow Pius alumni had been shot and killed.
God.
And it said, RIP Ashley Love. And I was like, what?
Oh my God, I'm just getting shivers. I'm literally getting shivers, Kyle. Oh my God.
I remember being taken back, and I was immediately just stricken with a complete sense of disbelief. And I'm in LA, right? I'm in Los Angeles at the time. And so I go on to all the local Milwaukee news sites, and the house was the front page news story on every single Milwaukee news outlet. Every single one was the house. And so I'm seeing this, and I'm just in shock. And this can't be. This can't happen. And so I remember I picked up the phone. I called Anthony. He didn't answer. I called Anthony again. He didn't answer. And then I think it was that afternoon, and eventually I got a hold of your mom's number through maybe a phone book, which almost sounds ancient now.
Yeah.
And I called, and your mom picked up, and we talked for a bit, and she's like, Anthony doesn't really feel like coming to the phone right now, but you understand, of course. Like, it's not personal. It's just, this is how he's grieving with us right now. And I said, no, of course. And after we talked for maybe 10, 15 minutes at most, after we got off the phone, I hung up and I immediately called my mom. And my mom at the time was a flight attendant for Midwest Airlines. And I called her and I said, I need to be on the next flight back to Milwaukee. And she helped me that day get on the next flight that was available to fly back to Milwaukee just because at the time, here's my best friend, Anthony, struggling with this, right? And all I knew was that I was thousands of miles away from him in Los Angeles, feeling helpless and that I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And so it was important for me just to get back, just merely to be able to see him, just to say, hey, dude. And even if we sat around and did nothing for the next few days, which for a lot of it, that's what we did. We all just kind of sat around and did nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember there was one night where I was at your mom's house with you guys, and I was hanging with Anthony, and was it Father Tim?
Father Tim, yep.
Father Tim came to the house to do a blessing of sorts and to just kind of chat with everybody.
Yeah.
And I remember he had brought with him the communion wafers and the wine and what have you. And we're all sitting down at the dining room table. And he looks at me and he goes, are you Catholic? And I said, no, sir. And he said, well, you are tonight, son.
Oh, that's Father Tim. Let me tell you. That's right, Kyle. He's truly a man of God. Let me tell you.
If I'm not mistaken, he was the one that answered the call in the middle of the night when this happened.
He was. He's the only one who picked up. What happened is, after all, whatever was going on, I was outside in the police car.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw they were all out there. The police were out there. I can see it so vividly right out of my eyes closed. Standing out there, they in lines with guns. They were like out there, like lined up. And I was in this police car with this lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, Tammy, Tammy. I'm like, oh my God, they're coming. I remember saying it now. I can feel it coming back. They're coming, they're coming, they're coming. I kept saying that, like they're coming back to get us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no. She said, Tammy, look out there. They're all out there. Nobody's going to get through. And that's when I saw them coming out the house with the body.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, nope, Tammy, you don't need to see that. She just took her vehicle and she turned it around.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think when it hit me, like, I need to pray. I'm like, I need to pray. I said, I can't. I need to pray. I need a priest. I kept saying it. So she must have told somebody, and they called around then.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the police then called around, and the only person that answered their phone, because this is the middle of the night.
Exactly. Yep.
Was Father Tim.
Yep.
And he came out to the house that evening, right? In the middle of the night.
Right away, yep.
What an incredible thing to do.
And to this day, he is by our side. We didn't know this guy from Adam. They just got him. I mean, he became part of our family. I mean, he's one of the people that saved my life. Seriously. Mm. I mean, because I would sit screaming. They didn't know what to do. So through this first week, they would call him, and he would come over. Like, and I remember, Kyle, also vividly him. I'm just like crying. I ran into my mom's bedroom. He came in there. Literally, this man held me on the ground as I'm bawling, saying, I'm never going to see Ashley again because I can't forgive the people that did this. And, you know, I was just crazy. He's like, Tammy? He's like, no, Tammy, God's mad too. He's like, God's mad too. He's like, I'm mad too. He's like, God knows this is not God's will. I mean, he just went on and on, Kyle. I'll never forget that ever.
What a great man. Here's another question that Michael has. Did Tammy get a call when the case officially went cold at the Milwaukee Police Department? This is actually a question that I don't think I've ever heard the answer to.
Oh, I never received a call telling me it was a cold case.
Really?
Never. I'm the one who would call. I'm the one who would try to, you know, see what's going on. I'm the one who, I think it dawned on me by doing my own research online where I'm reading about cold cases and what it usually the criteria is. That's what it hit me very hard.
Yeah.
It feels like it's forgotten, like nobody cares, like it's just laying there, like, oh, another murder, another one got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it's especially hard because you can't help but think that you're not the only one here, right?
Exactly. Like,
there are so many other Ashleys, unfortunately. You know, I was just reading in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel quite literally this morning that 2022 has once again hit a record for homicides in Milwaukee.
God, it's so sad. Mm-hmm. All these people, I mean, they all have families, they all have friends, they all have lives.
Mm-hmm.
Just in one second, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, like how anybody thinks they have the right to do that, to end another person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's tough to grasp.
Yep.
All right. Let's listen to this next question from David.
Hello, this is David. Really enjoyed listening so far and interested to know if you guys have tried contacting any of Love's former neighbors. Maybe they've seen or heard something. Thanks again for your hard work. Keep it up.
The first part I can answer, when we started doing this podcast, I think, Tammy, you might remember me telling you about this. We sent letters to all of the houses near your old house. And we asked everybody on behalf of the podcast, if you have anything you want to talk about, if you have anything you remember seeing, hearing, what have you, reach out to us. We'd love to talk. We'd love to kind of see what's going on.
Yeah.
And nobody reached out to us. But I remember that you told me a story not that long ago about a letter or maybe a card that you received from one of the neighbors. Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. So our house on the side, we had a long driveway. And the other side of that driveway was a house, the windows for the next door neighbor's house. And, you know, we had our cars parked in the driveway. Well, I received a letter after this happened from the man that lived next door. And in the letter, he wrote that he remembers that night he thought the two thugs were breaking into our cars. So he must have looked out like the window and he must have seen somebody out there doing something. And he said that he thought they were breaking into our, the two thugs were breaking into our cars.
And this was the night that Ashley was killed.
Yeah.
So he saw two people by your vehicle that was parked in the driveway.
Yeah, correct.
In the early hours of the morning before Ashley was killed.
That's what he said. He thought they were breaking into our car.
Right.
There's more in the note, you know, but I can't remember because, of course, I gave it to the police. So I'm like, well, here you go. Maybe he, you know, saw something.
Oh, interesting. So you handed that card or letter over to the police. And this, of course, goes right back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Hindsight, you wish you would have at least taken a picture of it, right?
Oh, I wish I would have. Oh, my God, yes. Yeah.
Just so you would have had the information that was on that card.
Yeah.
But now that's with the authorities.
Exactly.
Ooh, that's hard. Yeah. Do you remember anything about like descriptions or anything of that nature that they talked about? Or
no.
Is that the part that you wish you remembered?
I don't remember anything else. I mean, I think all he said was the two thugs.
Wow. But it's interesting that he says two people.
Exactly.
That's something I think of note here, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The next question here, this is from Owen.
Hey, I just wanted to say I love your guys' podcast. But I had a question for Steve because I know he's the former police detective with Milwaukee. I wanted to know, what do you think the missing link is in this case?
As far as the missing link in this case, that's very difficult because what I know about the case is basically from what I was told by other detectives that talked to me. I still get some phone calls from younger detectives that I've had in training sessions, and they ask me questions what I would have done and what they thought about this. But this case here, again, victimization, we take a look at who the victim is, what's going on in her life. And they went through that. She does not appear to be a typical homicide victim. She's an honor student. She's working. She's living at home. Not involved in drugs. I mean, you can't say anything bad about her. So I know that a lot of the detectives that have worked on this case are basically touched by what a great family she had, what a great young person she had, what a loss the city of Milwaukee suffered when she was murdered. And it was such a brutal murder that I think it just shocked the conscience of a lot of the detectives that worked on this case, and they wanted to solve it. But again, you know, with all of the other cold cases, everybody feels the same way about those other victims. You know, if it's your son, even though he was dealing marijuana and out in the street with a gun, I mean, we've had, you know, a number of cases like that. And obviously, we still want to arrest and work on those types of cases because those suspects are still in the community and they could commit another crime. And it's just not good, in my opinion, to have unsolved homicides in any major city.
The next question here is from Sarah.
One of the friends said something or recalled Ashley saying that she was going to have some more time coming up and potentially working less. Just curious if there was any follow-up to that. Looking forward to more. Thanks.
I know exactly what she said. That struck me too, that sentence when she said that. I thought the same thing. I'm like, what does she mean by that? You know, I remember that. And I remember Joey telling me this, that Ashley said that to her. And I'm like, that's just an odd thing. It's in one aspect, I think maybe she was just saying that, like hoping that she wasn't going to work as much.
Right. Just like a friendly thing to say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you say, oh, I'm not going to work as much. We're going to hang out more. We're going to be able to do this. And hoping that, that's what I think. But then after hearing Brighton talk, I think it was back in letters to Ashley. Don't you remember when he said that he was going to make her the manager?
Yes.
Of the store. I'm thinking maybe because she worked a lot of hours, maybe she was going to work less hours because of that. I mean, I don't know. That was another thought in my head.
Okay, so another thought you had was that Brighton, the manager at Arby's, was going to be essentially promoting Ashley. And as a result, Ashley would free up her schedule a little bit because she wouldn't be working as many hours.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, that struck me too, that sentence when she said that. I thought the same thing. I'm like, what does she mean by that? You know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. I think those are both good ways to interpret it, and probably the best we can, right?
Exactly.
Which is either she was going to have more time because she knew of a pending promotion.
Yeah.
Or she was going to have more time in a sense that she wanted to have more time. And she was just kind of saying that to her friend. Like we all do. I mean, I'm guilty of this more than anybody, where it's like,
I am.
Yeah, right? Where I'll say, oh my gosh, it'd be so great if we hung out more. And you know, it just, life gets in the way. Right. And that is an unfortunate reality as you're an adult. Right. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I think those are both good answers as to why that could be.
That was a good question, because I thought the same thing when she said that. That hit my head too. Like, what does she mean? You know? So, yeah.
So clearly, we're not the only ones that had a head tilt kind of moment when you hear somebody say something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Debbie here with a few more questions. What does Tammy think about the theory Kia suggested? Does Tommy fit the description of who Tammy saw the night of the murder? Thanks. Keep it up.
I want to say no. Mm-hmm. I don't. I mean, is it? Could it be? Yeah, it could be. Anything could be at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but to me, I don't think it went that way.
So you think Kia's theory, while an interesting theory, is not the way that things went?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Why, out of curiosity?
Just knowing the things I know through the years of investigating things. Uh-huh. I think it's, I don't know, different people, you know?
You think it's different circles, different people, right?
Yeah, and I could be wrong. I mean, that's interesting, you know, to me too.
So your kind of thought process on this is maybe not quite matching what your kind of gut instincts are telling you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, interesting. What do you make of the story that Kia shared about how she was robbed at gunpoint in a Milwaukee alley?
That is crazy. That is just
the weekend she came back for Ashley's memorial.
Oh, I didn't know anything about that. That is just terrible. I never knew that even happened. I'm like, oh my God, that's awful.
I thought it was incredibly courageous of Kia to share that story.
Yeah, I did too.
Right.
Because, I mean, who did? She don't know who did this to her.
Mm-hmm.
That's God.
Yeah.
It's awful. I mean, like I said, I didn't know anything about it when I was listening. I'm like, what the heck?
Does it strike you as strange that that happened the same weekend of Ashley's memorial, like when Kia was in town?
Yeah. To me, that's very odd. But I also don't know why she wouldn't have reported it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she mentions that she didn't report it because she was scared. You know, it was the classic thing you hear, right? The snitches get stitches and all that, right? But I think this also kind of speaks a little bit to the power of the podcast, in that she wasn't feeling like she should go to the authorities with this, but she was trusting enough in us that we would handle it with care and tell the story with the proper protections. And
you know what? I think that is for a lot of people. I really do, Kyle.
You think what?
That they're afraid to talk to the police.
You think there are friends, colleagues, what have you, with Ashley that are still to this day afraid to talk to the police?
I believe so. I believe they don't have the right person. In the beginning, I even said, why don't you have like a female talk to the females? Because, you know, you're intimidating. I told the one that you're intimidating. They're afraid of you. They'll call me up and tell me stuff, but they won't say it to you. And that happened. They called me up and they said, I can't remember what it was. So I called the police. And I'm like, detective, I don't remember which one it was. I said, this is what they told me. So then they would call them and talk to them. And they're like, well, they didn't say that to me. I'm thinking, okay, why are you telling me this? But you know, tell them that. I'm like, then I'm thinking, well, maybe because they're afraid of them. Mm. You have to find the right person to have the right connection with, I think.
Yeah. Well, and Sean talked about this in one of our early episodes. Yep. He said that two very experienced detectives could go talk to the same person and have two completely different interviews with two completely different sets of information. It's about how you connect with the person. It's about what questions you ask or, in fairness, don't ask, right? And that's all part of this.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, you know, since we've started this podcast, there have been so many people who have been brave, like Kia, who comes to mind, and like Austin, yes, and Brighton.
Yes, these people have to give them credit. Yep.
Right, these people come forward, and they're sharing these stories, sometime for the first time in 13 years.
Yeah.
And not only sharing these stories, but oftentimes telling stories they haven't told before, they haven't shared with the police before,
yeah,
or expanding on those stories because they felt that at the time they didn't have enough time to share their full story with the authorities, right? And so, yep, it's incredible that some people have been so open and honest,
really,
and
is
transparent and forthcoming, if you will, with this information. But at the same time, we also struggle to get certain questions answered, even by a majority of people that we're talking to, or to get certain people to join us and talk on the podcast. And I think that kind of goes back to your point, right? Which is, are people still scared? There is oftentimes a thought that kind of goes through the back of my head, which is, are they telling us everything they know, or are they leaving something out? Are they scared about something?
Yeah.
And inevitably, so many times people will say, well, it had to be somebody that knew Ashley. And to me, that, yeah, says, well, if they knew Ashley, and I agree, and,
yeah,
I think the authorities agree, right?
Yeah.
If they knew Ashley, then by proxy, they probably were very close within Ashley's friend circle as well.
Exactly. They knew them. Exactly. You're right there. Exactly. Even all these years later, it's just like, I believe that things are being held back. And in my heart of hearts, I understand. I get why they would want to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But at the same time, I'm like, please just let it out.
Hi, Kyle. This is Carly from California calling. I'm just calling to let you guys know that I really think what you're doing in this podcast is amazing, and I am calling with a question. And my question is about whether this podcast is something that can get a case reopened. Can this podcast get the case reopened? And what does it take to reopen a case?
What a great question. What a loaded question,
exactly,
huh?
Well, they claim it's never been closed, and it's an active investigation. That's what they always tell me.
That's a good point.
They say that all the time. This is an active investigation. Exactly.
That's a really good point to make here. This case, by definition, has never been closed.
Exactly.
That's merely cold.
Yes. That's what they always tell me, that they're always actively looking, you know, and when someone comes in, they always question them, like, about things. Be Ashley's case, they'll question if they know anything. I'm like,
right.
I mean, I want to believe him, Kyle, but I don't.
One of the people that I asked this question to before we talked today was the mayor of Milwaukee, Mayor Cavalier Johnson. And he sent us a quote that we could share for the podcast. And I wanted to share his quote with you and get your thoughts on that. The question that we asked the mayor was, what can citizens of the community do to help solve cold cases? The Milwaukee Police Department is already overworked with too few people working to solve these cold cases. This is the mayor's response. Cold cases are solved with new information, so anyone with information on Ashley Love's case needs to come forward. Bringing attention to this case, as you have done over the past few years with this podcast, is one approach. If the city's dire fiscal situation were different, I would also favor adding police officers. That said, our police department has the necessary resources available now to follow up on any new leads in Ashley Love's death.
You need more people, not just waiting for people to come. Like I was told, they need to do their job, their taxpayer money's job that we're paying for.
Right.
I was told that they'll let us do our job. You know, your taxpayers' dollars. I would have been fired if I didn't 13 years later and my job wasn't complete. I could just look at the statistics and look at other people. And to me, when you have a city that's so full of crime, wouldn't you want to put more resources in place, more detectives out there doing the legwork, the footwork, the calling,
right,
in order to solve crime? So it'll show these criminals, oh, you're going to get caught. Maybe that would prevent future crimes.
You're saying send a message to the people that are doing these crimes that,
yeah,
could hopefully prevent future crimes from happening.
Yeah, by solving them. Because then, right, like, oh, we ain't going to go do it there. We're going to get caught.
Right. Because that's a little bit of the problem that's happening in Milwaukee right now, right? Is yeah. that people are literally getting away with murder.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's so sad because it's like, oh, wow, another murder. You know, like, it's natural. When did taking somebody's life just become natural? Like, it happens all the time. Like, when did that ever happen? That should never happen, ever, ever.
What do you think is the key to getting this case ultimately solved?
Well, number one, I really think new eyes. You need new eyes. You need different eyes on this case. Start at the beginning. Start from right at the crime scene. Take it all back out. Piece through it one by one because somebody's going to notice something that somebody else didn't. Mm-hmm. It's like that all the time. It's like in your own house, you're looking for something and they're like, I can't find it. But the next person walks in and it's right there.
Right.
There's something in there that was missed. I totally believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in Ashley's case, but probably in lots of cases.
Mm-hmm.
They need more detectives in there.
Hi, my name's Kelly, and I'm from Canada. Big fan of the podcast. I had a question that I've been thinking about. Was there ever a sketch made of the intruder that broke into the Love House?
This is a really great question.
Oh, I thought the same dang thing. I did hypnotherapy with my therapist about all this stuff. So I talked to the police. Never. Nothing. Didn't do anything.
You've never done a sketch of the intruder?
Nope.
Do you know why that is?
I have no idea. My first thought when I think of that, they know who did it. You know? Why would you not want me to do that? Like, now it's like years later, it's hard. It's harder now than it was back then. But I did hypnotherapy and yep.
And what was the point of the hypnotherapy that you did?
Trying to bring out something that something was blocked in my head that something I couldn't remember with my therapist.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did that experience go for you? Was it a valuable experience?
I think so. I did a lot of this. She specialized in trauma, deep trauma, you know, and stuff like that.
Right.
A lot of stuff I did was like the hypnotherapy, and then there's work for the other stuff. I can't remember what it's called.
Was this fairly shortly after this had happened?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah, it was.
And I presume this was multiple sessions.
Oh, yeah. It was years.
Wow.
It was years.
Years of hypnotherapy. And were there things that happened in hypnotherapy that you then took to the authorities?
Yeah, I would tell them what happened. In order for me to be able to basically survive, because I would have these panic attacks, like anything would trigger it. I didn't know what triggered it.
Yeah.
I had to go back and relive everything. I had to go back. And I went back. I was up in Ashley's room. I went back. Like I saw details. And yeah, it was.
Right. You had to really go through it.
Oh my God. In order to be able to
move past it.
Yeah. In order to know how to control it.
Right. Interesting.
And it, let me tell you, it was something. I mean, after these sessions, I was hysterical. Like, my therapist was holding me. I couldn't even function, like, after. I was so drained. I mean, but it worked. It helped.
It helped you be able to move on and be able to control all that.
Yeah, to be able to know what would trigger something. And, I mean, I can't even explain it. It's so, so odd. But it worked. You know, it doesn't work for everybody.
Sure.
You know, that I can say.
But for you, it was a lifesaver.
It worked. Oh, my God, yes.
And so a lot of what happened in that hypnotherapy and these other kind of therapy sessions, you would take to the police and say, oh, I remembered a detail. As I was going back through it, I remembered this, I remembered that. And in it, did you ever discuss, like, hey, do you think we should make a sketch of the intruder?
I'm pretty positive I did. They basically just blew it off.
Really?
And if I'm not mistaken, I think I would email, because I had emails. I would email and tell them, you know, my therapist said I should, you know, maybe get a sketch person out so they can do this.
Uh-huh.
Nothing.
Wow. That's so interesting. Do you think the reason they wouldn't do it is because the intruder was masked, essentially, had a bandana?
That
could be part of it, right? But even still, if you're willing to do a sketch, you would think that they would at least kind of humor it, right?
I would think, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Huh.
Interesting.
But, you know, a lot of the stuff, I guess, don't maybe conform to what they look at. They need to see these facts right down. You know, they don't think outside the box, I guess, so to speak. You know, I mean, with different forms of stuff, to me, you never know what's going to help. You never know.
So I think that's all the questions that we have at this time that have come into the hotline.
Well, Kyle, I have to tell you, thank you all for submitting these questions, because these are really, really good questions. The ones that I haven't myself thought about, I have thought about all these, and I appreciate it. Means that people are actually listening and really want to help. And I appreciate that more than you'll ever know. Thank you all. Keep coming. Keep submitting questions. Keep putting tips and leads, anything. Please, it's all appreciated.
Yeah. No, it's really rewarding to see not only how many people are listening to the podcast, but how many people are engaging, right?
Yeah. Your question could lead to somebody else to think, oh, wait a minute. Like, what about this? And then that could lead to somebody else and call a call. So it's everything's appreciated. Everything that you call in with,
yeah,
listen to, spread the word. The further it gets, it might hit that person that, oh, wait a minute. I remember someone saying something at this one party, you know, and, oh, let me call in.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's, again, the whole goal of this podcast is really to get people talking.
Exactly.
Well, this has been great. Tammy, thank you so much for answering questions with us today.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking me the questions. It means that something's being done. Like, it's not forgotten. And that means so much.
Next time on Love and Justice.
Hey, Kyle. Last night I was going through my Facebook messages from around the time that all this had happened. Ashley actually sent me one at 3 a.m. on Sunday, 48 hours before she was murdered. She sent it after she attended a party. This is what her text said. Duff, have shit to tell ya. I'm like drunk as fuck right now, but I figured I'd let you sleep, so I'm sending you a message here, ha. Text me as soon as you fucking read this. Shit went down. Don't tell anyone. Just text me like now.
Love and Justice is an official podcast of Magic Lamp Productions and is recorded all over the United States of America. This episode was executive produced, directed, and hosted by me, Kyle Olson. Co-executive producer, Noel Kane. Segment producer, Jessica Solomon. Producer, Maddie Rose. Associate producer, Miranda Schmidt. Editing by Cody Crabb. Production assistant, Natalie Izquierdo. A very special thanks to Tammy, Joe, Anthony, and Alex Love. Additional special thanks to Teresa Brockman, Terry Love, and Third Wheel Podcast Studio Los Angeles. If you have clues, this is your cue to give us a call on our hotline. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and rate it 5 stars. Every single review greatly helps our exposure and increases the odds that more people will listen, which will help get this case solved. So please, rate this podcast and share it with your friends today. It only takes a quick minute. Somebody knows something. Maybe not everything, but something. Chances are that somebody is in Milwaukee right now. It could be you. There is now a cash reward of $12,000 for information provided that leads to the conviction of Ashley Love's killer or killers. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.